Bookend your day with Essential Listening. Breakfast and drive from 6am and PM on RN.
And welcome to Life Matters. Yes, Natasha Mitchell joining you. It's our Friday talkback. I love this day here on RN. Look, debate around the government's paid parental leave policy scheme has... policy is very much centred around working mothers this week, hasn't it? Today, we want to consider on the show where things are at for working fathers. The Coalition's plan is to pay mothers up to $75,000 over the first 6 months of a baby's life. But the lack of clarity around what is on offer for dads points to a broader issue, and that is the invisibility of dads as parents in the workplace. So are you a dad? Have you taken any kind of paternity leave to care for your children? We want to hear whether your managers or your colleagues or your peers or even your partner was supportive of that choice. If not, why not? If they were supportive, what did your employer do to make it easier for you to take that leave? We want to consider, have things really changed for men who want to spend more time fathering and less time working? And mothers have been sharing their family stories on our Facebook page too. Keep doing that. Give us a call, 1300 22 55 76. That's 1300. Call RN. And if you're in South Australia or the Northern Territory, get on the phone right now. If you're in WA, ring the listener line, and the number is 02 833 1430. Facebook, of course, Twitter at RN Life Matters, or even better today, our SMS line 0418 226 576. So that number again, 1300 22 55 76. And we're interested to hear from employers today too. Perhaps you receive requests from your male staff who are about to become fathers, and they want to take some paternity leave. How do you navigate that in your workplace? What issues does it raise for you? Love to hear from you. Well, we want to talk to a fellow in the US today because, of course, this is a universal issue for working fathers. David Perry is an associate professor of history at Dominican University in Illinois in the US. He's written about his experiences, though, not just as an academic and an historian, but also as a father. And it was a very interesting piece that prompted us to get in touch with him. David Perry, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Natasha.
You're an academic. You're an historian. Why on earth are you writing for the likes of CNN about parenting and fatherhood?
Well, I have to say it was an accident. I started writing because, like many people, I found things that were frustrating. And the one skill for sure that I knew as an academic that I could bring to the table was my ability to write and to articulate what was going on. So I started applying that. In America, we have a lot of discussion about what good are the humanities, what good is a liberal arts education. And one good is that it allows you to really think hard and then explain what you see. And so that's what I've been doing since I became a father of two children, a 7-year-old boy and a 5-year-old girl.
Yes, tell us a little bit about your family and how it changed your life.
Right. Well, my son has Down syndrome, so that's one of the key details on the table. And I don't know if I would be talking to you on the phone right now if that wasn't true, because it forced me to rethink what I was expecting. When you are expecting a child, as I'm sure many of your listeners know, you spend a lot of time imagining what your life will be like, and you probably get most of it wrong because every child's different, but at least you have sort of a plan. And then when you have a diagnosis like Down syndrome, suddenly you have to rethink what's going to happen and who you are and what life looks like. And so I spent a lot of time reading and thinking and learning from my child and from the people around me. And then I thought I was ready to write about it. Mm. The other thing that was very important is I needed to talk about it in my workplace. I had just gotten a new job. In fact, I was interviewed for the job 5 days before my son was born and offered it about a month after he was born. So I came with this new baby and a lot of special needs, and I thought I could hide it. I could pretend that everything is just sort of normal and, oh, yeah, the baby's fine, or I could talk about it a lot. So I brought my working issue, my dad issues, into the workplace.
Now, Was that considered unusual? How was that responded to? Because this is one of the difficulties that men often talk about. I mean, mothers talk about their children quite a lot at work, certainly amongst other mothers, although that's sometimes a difficult conversation to have as well, because people think, well, you're not focused on the task.
Right.
How is you really being present and outspoken as a working father at work impacted on you?
Right. Well, let me just say as we go that there are lots of challenges for working dads, and they're quite real. Everything I'm saying today, though, I think is also very important for working mothers, that many of the challenges that mothers experience in the workplace would be mitigated if dads also spoke up. So I don't want your listeners to think I'm blind to the challenges. At least in the U.S., it's very clear that when men have kids, their jobs, they tend to do better in their jobs. They tend to get promoted. People call it the daddy bonus. When women have children, there's a mommy tax. People tend to do slightly worse in their careers. So let's just put that on the table ahead of time. It was fine at my job. That was the amazing thing. I was nervous about it. I thought about it. It was not an accident. I thought hard about it. But it was fine. As soon as I started talking about my issues and what I needed, everyone around me responded really positively. Now, I work at a university. It is, in fact, a Catholic university with a big tradition of being family-centered and focused on social justice. I can't say that in every workplace people would have the same experience. But for all my concern about it, in fact, being able to be open about these issues that were going on in my life, I think it made me a better professor, a better teacher, a better coworker, and it certainly made me feel better that I didn't have to compartmentalize. I didn't have to fragment myself in which in certain hours of the day I was only a professor and in other hours of the day I was only a father, but I could just be a working father all the time.
Now, you work in a very privileged environment. This is academia. Yes, enormous workload, but with that also enormous flexibility, an unusual workplace. This
That's
has
right.
made you think more broadly about the challenges that fathers have in bringing fatherhood into the workplace. What are the key challenges as you see them?
Well, I think fathers, to some extent, we have all the same challenges that women have. People don't necessarily expect us to have those challenges, so we can pretend we don't have them. People, when women, as you say, talk about it in the workplace, there's a concern that people will think, oh, they're distracted from their job. Men can just not talk about it. People will say, how's the baby? They'll say, fine, and then go on with their day. But in fact, we have all the same challenges, especially as, again, I know less about the Australian workforce than I'd like to. In America, fathers are, in fact, doing more and more. They're doing more and more of the caregiving. They want to do more and more of the caregiving. They want to be equal partners with their spouses. Not every person, not every parent of either gender wants to do that. But in general, there's lots of data showing men want to do more. So we need to find ways to talk about it. We need to find ways to explain it. One of the things we have is, of course, that flexibility. That's a real challenge for all working parents. I have it as an academic. My schedule tends to mean that when I need to leave my campus to go be with my children, I can do it, and then I can go back to work at 9 o'clock at night or so, and not everyone can do that. Childcare is very expensive. If a parent wants to stay home with a child, that's very expensive. That's a big loss of potential salary. And then there's parental leave, which is, of course, the issue that's coming up right now in Australia. In most places, men don't have any access to parental leave.
And that's the case indeed. I just want to come to a call. This is the Life Matters Friday Talkback. Natasha Mitchell with you, as is David Perry. He is an Associate Professor of History at Dominican University in Illinois in the US. He's written some fantastic articles as a father about fatherhood and navigating fatherhood and the workplace. And that is indeed what we're considering today. Are you a father? Have you asked for paternity leave to care for your children? How is that received at work? And I wonder how it was received at home and perhaps by your peers too. We want to talk about working fathers and the challenges and opportunities that they face in that role. The number to call is 1300 225 76. Jason in Victoria, good morning to you.
Good morning, Natasha.
Now, 18 years ago, you got paternity leave.
I got paternity leave. I was working for a fairly prominent non-government organisation. We just negotiated a new workplace agreement. There was a clause in there that said paid paternity leave for 6 weeks. I was the first person to get it. As the birth of my son, so I had the 6 weeks, and at the time I was put under a lot of pressure not to take the paid paternity leave by the women managers in the organisation who were saying that there was a lot of financial pressure on the organisation and it was unfair and so on. And I argued, look, I said, I've given up a lot of time, travelled interstate a lot, been away from my kid. This is in the agreement. I'm having it. And it's my understanding that they altered the agreement after that. And I don't know what it's like now, but certainly for the next few years, nobody got paid paternity leave.
Why did you persist?
Oh, I thought it was important. It was a right. I actually have structured my working life throughout most of my kids' years so I could work from home a lot of the time, or as required. Had small businesses so that I was around. And then another story I'd like to relate is that about 7 years ago, I took on a full-time job, and I was talking to my younger children about it the night before. And I said, you know what tomorrow is? And they said, oh, is it the solstice? Is it the equinox? It was obvious I'd informed them of those things. And I said, no, tomorrow's the day I start work full time. I'll be leaving the house at about 7 in the morning. I'll get back at 7 at night. And my daughter said to me, and tomorrow's the day you cease to be a proper father. And I had to explain to her that she had a very privileged upbringing to Len, having her father at home, available to go to school, to sports events, et cetera, be there, pick them up from school and so on. So I just think there's a lot about structuring our lives to try to get that flexibility to be with kids when they're small. You know, it sounds trite, but they do grow up very quickly.
Yes, indeed. Jason, thank you for the terrific call.
Thank you.
David, I can hear you probably connecting with that call very much.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great that he persisted. That's quite a message from his daughter, the sort of the out of the mouths of babes moment. I do think that paternity leave is important. There are specific issues involving the body and recovering from pregnancy that are different for birth mothers. But I think not even paternity, parental leave for all parents in all situations, including in the case of new adoptions. These are social goods. They lead to better families. They lead to better, more stable families, to happier, healthier children. Fathers who take on more of the caregiving just in the first 2-3 weeks of after a birth are more engaged fathers for the entire life of the child. There's been studies about this. That just, it's not a year, it's not a stay-at-home dad, but just being more involved in the day-to-day caregiving in those first couple weeks sets the pattern for engagement throughout. That sounds to me like something we should all want.
Yes, indeed. On the SMS line, Paulie Redd writes, with only 2 weeks leave on offer, I opted to quit one of my jobs altogether when my son was born. More than money or career, my relationship with my child is infinitely more important, especially in the first few years of their life. My partner and I have struggled to find balance with work and parenting, and finally, after two long, sleep-deprived years, we seem to have achieved this. Tom, in New South Wales, good morning to you.
Hello, how are you?
Very well. What was your experience when your first bub was born?
I was working full-time as a sparky, as an electrician, and I didn't take my time off at all, a few days, and it was quite challenging for my wife. Mm. She did go back to work at 3 months, when the baby was 3 months old, and I went full-time at home then, and that was huge. That was such a big experience for me, and it was really great. And so my child is 5 years old now, and we have a huge bond. And I think I've been very lucky for that.
You're full time at home now.
Yeah, well, we just had our second bub, who's 8 weeks old, and I've been full time home the whole time, and it's been so much easier for my wife to have me there the whole time. And it's been such a different experience and so much better.
And how would you describe the impact for you?
I've really, really, really enjoyed being at home. Really enjoyed it. I do get out a lot. I've got all my activities. I go fishing. I socially drum with a local drumming group. I go to the park with my daughter all the time, so I see the same parents there, and I keep fairly active, but I love it.
It's allowing that time, isn't it? Tom, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
Mohammed, I think it is, in New South Wales. Good morning to you.
Very good morning and your listeners. I'm a father of a son who's turning 3 next week. Myself and my wife both are working full-time. My wife's taking a study as well. The problem we have is that my wife has been in contact with my son all the time, and as a result, my son has created this bond with her that even if I go at night trying to help him, he rejects me and says, no, I want my mom and my mom. So I was thinking if we could arrange a relationship for the employers to allow certain days for dad to work and other days, basically a part-time employment, basically, for the period of 6 weeks or whatever the government is allowing the paid parental leave. That will allow dad to establish that relationship or that bond between child and the father, basically.
Have you tried to request paternity leave before?
No, I haven't, because my son is turning 3 when he was born. I was at the beginning of the work employment with that company, and I didn't want to ruin that at that stage. So I didn't even have the courage to go and say, guys, is there any possibility there for me to go? And I was during the probation period, so it wasn't ideal to approach them for that sort of request, I thought.
So your concern was that you might actually lose the job?
That's right.
Yes, I think that's a common experience. Mohammed, thank you so much for joining us.
Can I say a couple things about that, Natasha?
Yes, David Perry.
This is why paternity leave needs to, or parental leave needs to be a universal social policy that is available to everyone. So that, oh, you're having a baby, it's just a normal thing. You get paid leave. That it's not a choice. It's not a job perk that some jobs have or some people at some offices negotiate for, but that it is a society-wide universal entitlement. I actually argue against means testing. I know that's one of the issues that's been discussed, because then it's only for people of a certain level. If everybody has it, it just becomes normal, and Mohammed's concerns about his position at his new job would vanish, because everyone would just normally do it.
Well, let's consider some of those issues and what is actually available to men now. Certainly Tony Abbott's paid parental scheme proposal has polarised not just Australian workers but the very government, who wants to see it through the Senate by July of next year. Most recently, dad and partner pay was a leave scheme introduced at the start of this year. It's currently 2 weeks of minimum wage time out for fathers to get to know their newborns. But even as minimal as it stands, did you know that most men do not apply for it? And we want to find out more about that. And perhaps you've had an experience of applying for it. How'd you go? 1300 225 76, or 1300 call RN. Joining me now in our Adelaide studios is Professor Barbara Pocock from the Centre for Work and Life at the University of South Australia. Welcome to Life Matters, Barbara.
Good morning, Natasha.
Now, just remind us what the defining differences are between the parental leave scheme currently in place under Labor, the previous Labor government, and what's on offer from the Coalition for both mothers and fathers.
Well, the existing paid parental leave scheme offers 18 weeks to new parents who've got fairly minimal labour market attachment. That is, they've had a job for 10 of the last 13 months and done a certain number of hours. And they get access, those people who are eligible, to 18 weeks at minimum wage, about $622 a week. And that's been there since the beginning of 2011. Now, the beginning of last year, 2013, Australia introduced dad and partner pay. So for dads and partners...
So it was last year, not this year. Sorry, yeah, that was my mistake.
It's available to partners, including same-sex couples, 2 weeks at that minimum wage as well. So, you know, there were many people who took forms of paid and unpaid leave prior to these schemes being introduced in Australia, but they were unevenly available. So if you're in the public sector, a large company, you had some paid leave in many places, especially for mothers, and many fathers took a period of unpaid leave or paid leave, a week or two. prior to this national scheme. So we've now got much broader availability. That was the big innovation which Labor introduced. And the debates now are over the level of payment, should it be income replacement, and what length of leave. So what the Tony Abbott's government took to the last election, or Tony Abbott's party took to the last election, and is now being debated, is an extension of the period of time of paid parental leave to 26 weeks and the level at which it should be paid. And the Prime Minister is very
he's very committed to wage matching.
Yeah. Well, to full income replacement up to a cap of now of $100,000 annual earnings. So it's a lot more expensive scheme. It's a significant longer period of leave. The thing that's different for fathers in the current discussion is that the existing dad and partner leave is contained and separate. If the dad doesn't or partner doesn't take it, it's lost to the couple. It's what we call use it or lose it. You don't get it if the partner doesn't take it. It doesn't flow on to the mother. In the new proposition, that isn't a principle that I can see. And, of course, this is going to be debated in Parliament and it will no doubt be subject to amendment. But I think we've got a lot of really interesting international experience which tells that unless you corral it and make it available only to dads, many of them won't take it.
They won't take it. So how are they taking up the father, dad and partner pay opportunity?
Well, it's pretty early days.
At a minimum wage in Australia right now.
Yeah, I think it's pretty early days. And we have some very solid, fabulous research being done on these schemes as they're introduced in Australia. They're important social innovations and they're being well watched. But it's early days. I think what Mohammed said about his own workplace is a really important issue. You can have something on paper as a right, but it's a long way from exercising that right where you are not very powerful. You're not very powerful when you start a new job. You might have an entitlement, but unless you've got some skill, experience or a really good relationship with your first-line supervisor, many workers struggle to exercise that right. So it's not just law, it's about culture and power for workers and the nature and quality of relationships in workplaces. And we do have in a lot of our workplaces a culture that is not very welcoming of fathers using their leave, exactly as Jason described 18 years ago. That is today in a lot of Australian workplaces, unfortunately, still.
What is at the heart of that in your mind?
I think Australia, like most countries, has very strong gender norms, and it's actually okay for a mother to request leave. It's legitimate, and that's why in Australia, one in two mothers of a preschooler ask for flexibility, and most of them get it. What we have in Australian workplaces is a much lower rate of asking for dads and a much higher rate of refusal, and that's about culture and gender norms. It's not as legitimate for a dad still in many workplaces, and I know there are lots of exceptions. There are terrific workplaces where, you know, it's the norm. The CEO did it, he gave permission to the rest, and it happens. But they are islands of good practice in a sea of mediocrity and, in some cases, real resistance to men stepping up to caring.
And indeed, there's no penalty to workplaces for refusing requests from men for paternity leave, is there?
There is an entitlement now to 2 weeks paid paternity leave, and provided that worker is eligible for unpaid leave, and that means they've got that pre-attachment to work before the baby arrives, same way mothers need to have to be eligible for paid parental leave. Provided that is there, then they're entitled to that 2 weeks paid leave, and most of them should be getting it and have some confidence in asking for it. I think that the power issues mean that some are very reluctant to ask, and the failure to have a bit of sting when you are refused, that is some significant discussion and public cases where employers understand this is not the right thing to do and there is a legal penalty if you unreasonably refuse. Now, we don't have that legal penalty in Australia as yet, and that means that our right to request flexibility, for example, a change in your work arrangements, is not very well understood in many workplaces, not very well used by men, and not very meaningful for those workers without much power.
I'll come back to you on some overseas stories, perhaps, Barbara, in a tick. Yes. Let's take some calls on the Life Matters Friday Talkback. Joining me is Barbara Pocock. She is Director of the Centre for Work and Life at the University of South Australia. And also with us is David Perry, an academic in Illinois who's had experiences firsthand of thinking and writing and living as a father who also works. Neil in Queensland, good morning to you. You have taken leave, I think, to look after your daughter.
Yes, Natasha. I was working for a council in the UK, and I think it's been in there for a fair while, and I had 3 weeks paid paternity leave when I first was born, and that was lovely. And then I departed acrimoniously from my employer, and some of the happiest moments of my whole life was seeing our young daughter to and from her playgroup, having an intelligent chat with her, come home, she'd do a painting, we'd have lunch, and so on. And I thought, well, why would you want to really exchange the world of the high social approbation of raising young people decently for the world of moral equivalence and headbutting of paid work, which is a lot of the time? And if I can slip in an anecdote, I think.
Sure.
Yeah, I was having a coffee and I overheard one lady, I joined in the conversation, saying she'd overheard another lady and who was reflecting on her child-raising days when she wasn't working. And this other lady, 40, said, it was great, if you like domestic duties, which you have to do anyway, then you join your mates with your kids down for a coffee and watch them grow and play and interact. And now I have to work. She felt the world of work was rather overrated, or careers anyway.
Neil, thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Mark in New South Wales, good morning to you. 1990, take us back. What happened to you?
I was working in the publishing industry, which is a very boozy, hard-working industry. And my wife became pregnant, and I thought, I'm going to quit, work from home, and build my whole business model was working around the kids. And so we ended up having 2 kids. I worked from home for 12 years. I was the ballet dad. I did the ballet hair and makeup and had all the big discussions about sex and life and relationships, and it was fabulous.
Yes, and I imagine your daughter's got lots of good stories to regale about that experience for her too.
Yeah, she does. We're all really close, and it was the best time of my life, although I eventually had to go and get a real job because I was wearing pyjamas far too often, and technology had changed. In the 90s, technology changed a lot, so I really felt the need to go back to work once they were in high school.
Great story. Thanks very much, Mark.
Thank you.
Mark making a distinct life change in order to be there for his daughter at home, changed his business model effectively. Anna in Canberra, now you have a recent experience with your partner taking paternity leave. Tell us what happened for him.
Right, yeah, we have an 8-month-old bub, and my partner took 3 months leave. 2 weeks was under the paid parental leave scheme, but then he took the rest of the time off as unpaid leave. He works for the public service, so very supportive line manager and a female-dominated workplace. But he did encounter what I thought was quite strange responses from some of his male colleagues, which was outright surprise, a lot of them, that he would even contemplate taking that much time off. Because it is our first bub, they're like, well, you only need a couple of days, just maybe rock up to the hospital for the birth and then, a couple of days and then you can leave your partner to it. And it was a decision that we had made together that that he'd take that much time off. And I think for him it was such an awesome experience, and I can see the bond that he has with our daughter and how special that is. And I don't know that he would have necessarily been able to have that had he not taken that time off. But, that not having that support from other male colleagues I thought was a bit strange. I mean, he's quite forthright, and so he stood up for himself and talked about it with them and explained how important it was. But I think that you know, I was surprised that he was a trailblazer. I thought this would be the kind of thing that, you know, most men would chase at the bit to want to do, and particularly within a permissive workplace. Mm. And he's also now gone part-time, but he has occasionally mentioned that this is quite likely going to act as a dampener on his career, because he's decided to opt for part-time work. Even though that is, within the public service, managers are meant to entertain a request for part-time work if you have a child under the age of 5. So he is doing things that are well within his rights and something that we've decided as a family, but there's not necessarily that cultural shift, I think, that really needs to occur that supports men as fathers and as having very important caregiving roles in those very early stages of children's lives.
You've nailed so many issues for us, Anna. Thank you so much for the call.
No problem. Love your show.
Thank you. David Perry, back in Illinois, I wonder whether men have described this experience to you that Anna was talking about, of other men in the workplace raising their eyebrows or questioning their work ethic or their ambition when they elect to make that time to care for their children.
I have to say that just sort of talking about it in the workplace is not so, I mean, people don't do it. Absolutely. I know so many stay-at-home fathers, in particular people who shifted to part-time, who really feel a little bit lost as a man. They know what they're doing. They're happy what they're doing. They're advocating for themselves. But they do feel that identity is a little bit questioned, that they're supposed to be. We're still stuck in a breadwinner, homemaker idea of the family, even though in fact families don't work like that at all. But at least certainly in American society, that's still the idea. So when you run against that, you risk feeling a little bit lost.
Yes, I don't think you're alone there. I think many Australian men feel the same way. Been terrific having your story and contribution on the show today. Thank you so much for joining us, David Perry.
Thank you for having me.
And David is Associate Professor of History at Dominican University in Illinois in the US. You're with Life Matters, Natasha Mitchell with you here on RN. It's our Friday talkback right across the nation, and we're talking about the experience of working fathers today. And if you are a father, for example, who's put in a request for paternity leave, what was the response from your peers, as much as your employers, perhaps your partner too? Tell us about your experience of juggling work and parenting. Would you like a different arrangement? Do you see that happening? 1300 225 76, or 1300 call RN. Now, if you're in the Northern Territory and WA, ring our listener line 02 833 1430, and you can text us too as well. The number is 0418 226 576. I want to bring in two experiences now. Ned, a positive experience. James, not such a good experience. Ned, good morning to you.
Good morning, how are you?
And congratulations on the arrival of your baby.
Thank you very much.
Now, I think you were able to make dad and partner leave, this new leave that's available to all men if they want it, work in your favour. Tell us what happened.
Well, I was a bit anxious leading up to the birth of the child because I'm a very structured person and I like to organise my leave, and my manager just said, just organise it when the time comes, and kind of blew me away a little bit. But when it did happen, it was a few days early, I didn't rock up to work, it was an SMS, and I was able to, from there, arrange my leave while I was on leave, and I was able to take it at half pay, which extended it out by double the time I was on leave.
So 4 weeks.
4 weeks. And I actually hurt my back while I was on leave, so I was able to take some sick leave, and they re-accredited that leave to the end, the paternity leave to the end of my block of leave. So it turned out to be 5 weeks. And, it was, my manager was very supportive, and HR was incredibly supportive as well.
Now, what is it about your workplace that clearly they've thought about this, and they'd thought about you becoming a father?
I'm not sure if it's who I work for. It's a male-dominated workplace, and I think my manager had children late in his life, and I'm surrounded by a bunch of new fathers. So it was almost expected that I would take time off away from work to help my wife.
Wow. Has that been the experience of other male friends of yours in other workplaces, do you think?
Oh, it's the way I think about it. And I'm sure our work is quite seasonal, so we can be busy. So it may have been a little bit different if it was a busy time of year, but definitely I had some important deadlines, you know, in the time I was away. But a lot of my colleagues, male and female, stepped up to the plate and took on the responsibilities that I was responsible for. So,
even though you feel strongly about this yourself, if you were in a workplace that wasn't supportive or that you sensed there was judgment or it was a very busy time, would you have pushed through to take that dad and partner leave that you're allowed to take now?
It's a hard question because if it's going to impact on your career and you're standing in the workplace, well, it's a harder question. I might have sought a little bit more help from family, but you know, it's something in the way the family's structured now, with, you know, people living further apart and grandparents taking on more sort of active lives outside the family. You know, I was just single-minded in that that's what I was going to do, and I'd seen the other guys taking leave that I work with, and that's what I wanted too. So,
Ned, great to hear from you today. Thanks so much for making the time for us this morning.
No worries.
And congratulations again. Now, that was Ned. So he's had a good experience. Now I want to come to James. He hasn't had such a good experience. Good morning to you, James.
Good morning, Natasha.
Now, you've had to fight a whole lot harder to get the leave you needed. So what happened?
I did. This was about 5 years ago, and things were a lot different then, I guess. But I work in a female-dominated workplace, which is terrific, a community health setting, and it's government. And, yeah, when my firstborn was born 6 years ago, all we were entitled to in terms of paid leave was something called attendance at birth leave. So I took my 1 day attendance at birth leave.
The bare minimum.
Yeah, and then we thought, you know, we'd move to this capital city for my partner's work, and the intention was that she returned to work full time. So when she did return to work full time after a year, the plan was that I went part time and I'd be primary carer. So I applied for to go 3 days a week, and I knew it was an entitlement because I had friends that worked in the government, and so I thought the best way to do it is just to have a conversation with my line manager. So I did, and she said, point blank, she said, no, we just can't do it. So, you know,
did she give you a reason?
She said, no, we're just not able to. It's not unjustifiable hardship. We have too many other people away. At that time, we actually had no one in my team on maternity leave. We had no one in a job share. So, you know, I put these cases to her, and eventually, you know, one of my colleagues said, you should just put the application in writing. So I did put it in writing, although there was no form to do so. I just had to write in the margins of what form we had, and I put it to her and, you know, called into the office, and she said, all right, we can, you know, I'll put this up as an application, but James, what about your career, was what she said. And I was gobsmacked. I didn't know what to say to that. And,
what about your career? What did you say to that?
Well, you know, it's one of those things you throw around smarter responses that I should have had, but I just said, at the time, I said, family's more important to me than career. And, so that was pretty much the end of it. I went 3 days a week for a year, and then we had another second born, and, it was very difficult anyway, to manage juggling work and the stigma of being probably the only guy in my workplace who had done this, because, you know, there's only about 10% men in my workplace. So.
But you're glad you did it, clearly, despite the effort it took.
I am, yeah. Yeah, it was a terrific thing, and now I'm 4 days a week, I wish I could go 3 days a week, but my most recent application was declined.
Oh, James, well done for persisting. Not an easy task, I can hear. And I really appreciate you sharing your story with us today.
Thanks, Natasha.
Barbara Pocock, two very distinct experiences there. What do they say to you?
Oh, they're just stories which are so validated by the national data. You know, we have a lot of stories like James's where, you know, people want to do a bunch of different things over the life course to deal with significant events like birth, and to get through and get what they need, they often have to be persistent. They rely on good enterprise agreements or award standards, so regulation matters. But what's also really important is often your relationship with colleagues, and that really comes through in Ned's story too, I think, that to change norms and to make it more acceptable for men to be involved in the way that so many want to be with their children, with all the dividends that has for relationships and kids and dads, really requires good relationships on the job, and people who understand the law, but also understand that, you know, we don't have 20 children over a 40-year career. We have one or two or three. These are really quite short periods of time, and workplaces and colleagues that manage it well will really be doing their workplaces and their individual, their productivity a lot of good, and certainly increasing labour supply, which we want. We want to retain people in the labour market. We want to keep them productive, and that means dealing with events which are completely predictable in our lives and shouldn't be treated as, you know, major shocks.
Yeah, that's right.
We need supportive cultures around them.
Life doesn't begin and end at the workplace door or at the house door, at the front door of the house either.
No.
Now, so this isn't just about fathers taking leave when their babies are born. This is also about fathers continuing to be fathers for many years, and the need for flexibility. Big issue for women, big issue for men. Employers are used to working mothers leaving early occasionally to pick up their children from school. Is it the same deal for working dads? Or is there still this minimum 9-to-5 expectation? Lisa Anise is joining us now. She's CEO of the Diversity Council of Australia. Good morning.
Good morning, Natasha.
You've looked into this at the council. How flexible is the average Australian workplace, if there is such a thing as an average workplace in Australia, for the working father?
Well, I think they're getting better. It's interesting because possibly you could have had this conversation 10 years ago and you would not have gotten all the callers that you received, which is heartening. Even if people are having negative experiences, I think it says to me that people are out there now making those requests. But there is a variation, and certainly we see a range from leading practice employers who are actively championing workplace flexibility for both men and women, and employers who really don't want to know about it and look at it as just a mum with kids, temporary band-aid solution until they can go back to work full time, and then a whole range of experiences in between.
What can flexibility look like? I mean, at the very basic level, it might be a manager saying, yep, that's fine, just leave early to pick up your kids a few days a week. But what can true flexibility look like? How can it work for a workplace?
Well, I think it's the only way that workplaces will be able to function properly in the future. I mean, the reality is that most households have the dual income family, and often that's not even because people are pursuing two careers. It's sometimes just the reality of servicing the family debt. So we're living in societies where there are two parents usually engaged in the workplace, and where people need flexibility for all sorts of issues. Now, we've focused in the last hour really on the topic of childcare, but we know with an ageing population that people are acquiring flexibility for other types of dependent care, such as elder care or care for their partners or people with disabilities. So flexibility really, as we see it, is an enabler for employers to support their employees manage the ebbs and flows of life and to continue to be productive and engaged employees whilst managing everything that's going on in the background. We need to remember people do bring their whole self to work. They may not appear to, but they do. And that whole self, if it's more fully engaged, if it's able to have an open conversation with its manager about the fact that, you know, it needs to manage a particular dependent care need, that's more likely to be an engaged person.
Okay, so that's good in theory, but obviously breaking that 9 to 5 or 8 to 8 or whatever regime you're in a workplace, breaking that takes some very tangible, practical steps. How do you advise the range of employers that you do on how to do that?
Okay, well, this was the subject of a DCA research project about a year and a half ago called Get Flexible, and we identified that there were 11 practical things that people could do, organisations could do, and that leading practice companies are doing. And they need to start by the way they design work and the way they design jobs. And so that's a broad-based HR approach. They need to look at the culture within the organisation to try and ensure workplace flexibility is an acceptable discussion point. You need leadership. That's the third step. So you need your organisational leaders to not only say that this is okay, but to walk the walk and perhaps show by example. You need discussion happening in organisations, so people who have the experience to come back and talk about it, or people talking about the process of applying for flexible working, and that can sometimes inspire others.
Mm. It might be actually saying, you know, if you need to leave early to attend to your fathering duties and do those hours with your children and then clock on a little bit later, that might work for many fathers.
It's true, but it's also, I think that we need to educate ourselves around what flexibility is, and a lot of people think it's about working fewer hours, and actually it's not that at all. I mean, it may be that it means leaving early or working reduced hours, but it might actually mean difference in the way work is done, so compressed hours or working away from the office for part of the week. So it may not actually be reduced hours at all. So I think we need to have a really good understanding of what working flexibly actually means as well. And it means different things to different people.
Let's take some calls. Mark in New South Wales, you've got a story about your firstborn.
Yes, in 1991 I was taken into a role that needed a lot of travel to Melbourne, and I was virtually fly in, fly out. And luckily, I was in Sydney on the day that my wife went into labour, and we had a wonderful yellow baby to start off with.
Oh.
And, well, that was just jaundice.
Yeah.
It only lasted 3 days, but yeah. He wasn't in any particular danger, but my boss said, I think you should stay in Sydney for, you know, the next 6 weeks, and I've been on parental leave ever since.
Gee.
Because you've got to look after those children. They're very, very important, and when you... I found that because I was there at the birth and I saw the first week, and it was a privilege to be there, that I bonded with my son, and I Skype him every day. He's in another city. I visit him once a week, he's gone on to great things. And you've got to just go in there and be a parent the whole time. My whole life changed. I had before being a parent and now after being a parent in the two major shifts of my life. And I really am grateful for my boss telling me, look, you stay in Sydney now for the next 6 to 8 weeks. And
Hear to your boss. Hear. Mark, thanks for the call.
Yep.
And obviously there are challenges for employers here. We haven't heard from any employers today. I was hoping to. Perhaps you'd like to get on our Facebook page, or you can email us directly from the Life Matters webpage, or our listener feedback line 02-833-1430. Michael in New South Wales, good morning. Now, you're not eligible for parental leave. So how have you navigated this?
Well, I work in the performing arts, which is essentially just straight contract work, and the deadlines are absolute, and so you can't not be there when you need it. So that's very, very tricky, just in terms of management, because my wife has got the full-time job. I also need to... I'm taking care of my two daughters, two wonderful girls, a 2-year-old and a 7-year-old. But I have to kind of keep up the network, keep up the working, and take whatever I can just to be able to continue working. But that means that because it's contract work, there's no parental leave option. None at all. And I'm sure that's the same with a lot of contract workers.
And the impact for you?
My wife, essentially, she wants to be at home with the kids. And because of the nature of my work and the nature of the situation of my work, where there's not a lot of money, we have a Sydney mortgage, which we have to service. And she, because she wants to be home, she's pretty angry.
Michael, thank you for sharing that experience with us. I don't think you're alone.
No, I don't think I am either.
No, thank you very much. Gwyn in Victoria, good morning to you.
Good morning to you. How are you going?
Very well. Now, you've got an experience here.
Yeah, I just want to let you know I'm a surgeon in Melbourne, and our workplace environment, I work with lots of other male and female surgeons, and it's very common for the guys, the male surgeons, to come into work a little bit later because they've got to drop their kids at school. It's very common for people to say, I've got something on with the kids this afternoon, I need to leave early. The males are applying for parental leave and it's being granted without any kind of question that may not be appropriate. And I think that makes it a lot easier for the women in the department to also step up to their parental responsibilities, because there's no question that you're just doing it because you're the woman. It's just something that is done. And I think it's really the only way that we're going to achieve true equality in the workplace is if everybody accepts that parental responsibility is part of life, and that's okay, and it doesn't make you a lesser colleague or any less able to get on with your job.
Yeah, what a normalising, sane thing to say, Gwyn. Thank you for the call.
No worries. Have a good day.
Let me come back to Barbara Pocock, Director of the Centre for Work and Life at the University of South Australia, and Lisa Annese, CEO of the Diversity Council of Australia, for your thoughts. I mean, that is such a sane, rational assumption, isn't it, Barbara?
It is, and I think the point Gwyn's making about if we can remove the stigma, the flexibility or leave stigma that is there in some places, it's going to be a huge step forward, and one of the ways of doing it is by men taking more of it, using it. That creates permission for women as well, but it is incredibly important for men. Just one factual thing, contract workers, the self-employed, casuals, they are all potentially eligible for the dad and partner pay and for paid parental leave for women as well. So it really depends on your attachment to the labour market. Have a look at the website for the Department of Human Services to check that, because it doesn't exclude people from eligibility.
Yes, but he made a good point, though, that even if that was the case, and as for many men, there's a feeling that they best not request it. Because it's not normalised yet, they best not request it because it might put them at risk in their workplace.
But he was the contracting comment came through, I'm a contractor, therefore I'm not eligible. That actually isn't true. You are eligible if you have worked in the last 10 of the 13 months up to 300 hours in total. So just check that. Don't assume you're not. But yes, the point is the law and the provision really is not enough if the culture is resistant to taking it. You're absolutely right. And that is the critical issue around flexibility and taking paid or unpaid leave for many, yes.
And I would second
so
that.
Lisa Annese, is that you?
Absolutely. I would definitely agree with what Barbara was saying. We decided after we did the Get Flexible research that we had to focus an entire project on men getting flexible, because the only way to create mainstreamed flexible work in workplaces was to make sure that men did it as well, because it creates normalcy for that to be an acceptable way to go and still maintain a career. So the more men who do take that up, and even though it might be more frightening for them initially, because the backlash is bigger due to stigma, such as what Barbara said, it is important in terms of trying to get a more mainstreamed approach to flexibility.
Is there a place, a comment from both of you, for meatier, teethier legislation here that would help workplaces shift culturally? Does it start sometimes with legislation over cultural change? Barbara Pocock.
I think the parallel here for me is issues like racism and sexual harassment. We needed to make cultural change so people could safely work without threat of harassment, sexual or racial. And the way we did that was to pass law, and we passed law well ahead of cultural change. Law doesn't make cultural change, but it really creates an environment where it's more focused upon and more possible. And what you then need are one or two quite publicly open cases which show there's a penalty here if you don't move your norms to do things in a legally appropriate way. And I think flexibility is of this type. We need some teeth in this law which says the real renegades out there, they aren't in every workplace. There's lots of great workplaces. We've heard about many this morning.
Yes.
But where they are not doing the right thing, they aren't seriously entertaining a request for flexibility and doing their best to help their worker deal with a, you know, it is very important, and we need stronger law on it.
We need some strong case studies. Look, thank you both for joining us. We're right out of time. Barbara Pocock, Lisa Anise, thank you.
Thank you, Natasha.
Thank you for all your calls. Get talking to us on our Facebook page. Thanks to Georgia Power for producing today's Talkback, sound engineer Michelle Watts, EP Jane Shields, Ian Coombe, Angela Owens, Lindy Rain, Tracy Tromph. Books and Arts Daily is swinging your way next. A great show coming your way. Afghanistan, Black Swan Theatre and so much more. It's 10 a.m. Have you caught up with RN's digital magazine? The White Paper brings a new dimension to your enjoyment of RN. Great articles, audio and video to play with. And this month we celebrate the Sydney Writers' Festival, from the ethics of true crime with John Safran to the making of that TV classic Breaking Bad with Vince Gilligan, and favourites like Benjamin and Michelle Law, Richard Flanagan, Christina Olsen. It's RN's White Paper. It's free and you can subscribe from our homepage.